Welcome to a IB Entertainment podcast on the IB Podcast Network. This is a special one. We're going to discuss a TV show that I love called The Bear on FX/Hulu. I am your host, Keith Fleming. With me, as always, the man that seems to do every podcast that I do, no matter what it's covering, Joe the Brain Mats. Joe, what's going on, buddy?
Oh man, I'm excited to talk about TV again. It's been a while.
Man, me too. It's been a great year for TV too.
It has been.
I'm like an all time number
of things, but yeah, I mean, yeah. When you look at, like, I always like to think halfway through a year, look back, what movies have I watched, what shows have I seen, and then try to guess, like, how many of these are, like, making my top 10 at the end of the year. And TV can be a little more. Some years it's stronger in the middle.
Right.
The movies, it tends to be weak early on. But yeah, this year is, I don't know.
Changing the list to a top 20, maybe?
Yeah, like, I don't know if it's still, like, we're on weird COVID scheduling where some things that were supposed to come out at some point last year got pushed to this year or what. But yeah, it's been jam-packed. Like, wasn't Euphoria this year? Or am I making
that up? No, it was Euphoria this year.
It was like 2 years ago to me.
I've been saying for a while that I think TV is now where the high quality stuff is. And, you know, it used to be movies. You would get, you know, whatever you want to call them, independent, you know, passion projects. And movies, unfortunately, now are, you know, all franchises, all CGI, all, you know, big business pretty much. And TV has kind of taken to me the mantle of where you get the really good, different stuff, where shows try things. And this, you know, The Bear is a prime example of that.
Yeah, I mean, The Bear is a good example of something that maybe would have been a movie 10, 20 years ago. I know that Christopher Storr, who created the show, he actually started writing it as the idea of trying to make it into a movie. But I don't know if it was just financial reasons or if he just realized it worked better as a show. Because I think, obviously, even though they're all shorter episodes except for the finale, there's a lot more that you can explore over these 8 episodes than even going into season 2.
Absolutely.
Than what they do in a movie. I'm certainly glad it's a TV show.
Yeah, and I'm glad that they have renewed it officially, which they had not as of like a week ago. But it is renewed, and I think it was the best pilot ever, and I'm talking about the 8 episodes. I feel like that's what it was like, or maybe you call it a prelude, the prequel of The Bear, you know, because I think it's going to be a show about the new restaurant, which is great. But let's just go ahead and get into it. But before we do, I just want to ask everybody, the IB Podcast Network, available on iTunes, Spotify, Anchor, all the places you can find podcasts. A lot of really good stuff on there. You got the You Got a Minute fan pod with Alan and RC. I know that RC and Sam jumped on and did an emergency pod about Vince McMahon. You know, I'm a big wrestling fan, Joe. He retired. The wolves were circling on him. Let's put it that way. Vince is messed up. I think that story is going to get a lot worse. And that's why he's stepping down. Cause I mean, Vince is WWE. So, they did a great podcast on that. You should check it out. Be sure to subscribe to that. All right, real quickly, I didn't want to, you know, I hate doing a recap or whatever, but I try to do a condensed synopsis. I'm going to try to go through this really quickly, Joe, and then we'll get into, you know, talking about the actual show. But The Bear, again, FX Hulu, it's about a chef who was working at some of the best fine dining restaurants in the world. His name is Carmi, played brilliantly by Jeremy Allen White of Shameless fan. You'll know him as Lip on there. He returns to take control of the family eatery after his brother's shocking suicide. What a huge cameo that is. We'll get into that a little bit later. The Original Beef is the name of the restaurant of Chicagoland. It's a neighborhood institution. You know, mom and pop, passed down generations. His mom and dad opened it. His brother ran it. It's not fine dining, though. It's definitely not. Carmi, is determined to make big changes, much to the chagrin of his fucked-up non-biological cousin, Richie, played by Ebon Moss Bacharach, also known as Cuz on the show. He also was fantastic in The Dropout this year as the reporter. They somehow find an urban crew more dysfunctional than the one from Girls, or even maybe Shameless, which is what's so funny about them, is some of these characters have been in these crazy shows. Karma's mission, which includes a revised menu, hiring a Culinary Institute of America-trained person named Sydney, played by Io, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce her name, Etta Berry. She's fantastic. There's so many good performances in this. It's met with skepticism by the veteran cooks who have worked there forever. Again, this is almost like a family. And optimism by a culinary curious baker, Marcus, played by Lionel Boyce, which again, another great performance. But Carmi begins realizing how deep in debt the restaurant is, how much of a mess his brother was, the compromises his troubled brother was making, and he begins confronting some of his own, personal demons. It becomes clear that training this particular bear, pardon the pun, will be more complicated than expected. I want to start here though, Joe. This was a show that was made and dropped on FX Hulu. It's, you know, it's not on any network, and that's a little bit unusual. Most FX Hulu shows are on TV, and then you can also find them on the app. I think FX Hulu, outside of HBO, do you think it's fair to say, makes the most quality content, consistent quality content of any network?
Absolutely. I guess Apple is actually coming on pretty strong this year as well. But yeah, whenever people talk about what are the best streaming services, I'm always shocked by how many people do not have Hulu up near the top, because since they partnered with FX, which also has that kind of similar dynamic where there's HBO shows that are also on HBO, and then there's Max shows.
That's fair. Yeah.
That are only on the streaming service. So obviously FX and Hulu are also getting into that sort of, where some things are on TV still, but others are only on the streaming service.
And what's interesting about it, you know, is I don't think this show would have been made or greenlit, whatever you want to call it, 10, 15 years ago without the streaming services. Because I think that we're seeing, again, like what I was talking about earlier, that used to it would be movies, you know, that these independent movies or these passion projects would get made. And you're seeing it more and more in TV. I mean, there was a period where Netflix, if you had a big enough name as a star or director or whatever, they'd throw, I mean, literally millions of dollars at you to do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah.
So I'm very thankful. Right. I'm very thankful that this show was made. And you brought up a really, you know, interesting point that I want to talk about. Hulu and FX, the shows on there, they've been pretty consistent that – they do it weekly, right? Like, they're not going to just put all the shows on at once.
Which, well, to the point where we're just talking about, obviously that's going to be how it works if you're showing these shows weekly on FX.
Right.
The fact that this wasn't that kind of gave them freedom.
That's true. I didn't think about that. Do you think it helped, though, or hurt the success of the show? Because the show, by the way, we should have talked about this. I don't know exactly how popular the show is, like what the ratings are, but the critics – freaking love it. And you know, both the critics and the people that are watching it just have really strong positive opinions about it. And I just wondered, you know, releasing them all at one time, did that help or hurt the show? I'm always in favor of it helps, because I believe, and I try to tell my wife this all the time, she doesn't watch as much TV as I do, you have to give any show 4 episodes, in my opinion, before you quit it. I just think that you have to, because TV is so different. You have to know the characters, understand them. I'm sure you've done this before where you'll watch a show and say, you'll think, you know, the first season wasn't that great. Well, when you go back and once you know all the characters and their quirks and their backstory and stuff, sometimes the first season's better on the second watch, because you just have to get to know these people. So I always think it helps to release it all at once, because – I think it's more likely somebody finishes it all, to where if this was coming out 1 week at a time and say you weren't crazy about the first or second or third episodes, you might give up on it, you know, having to wait week to week to where, you know what, I've already watched 2 episodes, there's only 6 more, let me just push through.
It really is show dependent for me. I honestly think that Netflix is, it's always got to be everything at once model is just bad for their business. I mean,
it's definitely flawed. You lose so much of the discussion around television shows.
The whole
right?
reason they ended up doing Stranger Things split was just because they wanted people to have to pay for different months.
Wow. I didn't even think about that. I was going to say just the fact that you lose all the momentum of these shows because,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, with Netflix shows, there's like 4 or 5 days after it drops that there's all these articles and discussions.
Yeah, everyone's talking about it.
Better Call Saul's months, right? Because it's week and week and speculation. And just to me, that's losing buzz. It's going to end up losing viewers.
Because, I mean, I think there's some shows that are more communal, which is, you know, a Stranger Things, a Game of Thrones. I mean, these are ones where people have theories that they want to talk
right.
about. But as soon as it's like, well, I watched 5 episodes last night. And what did you watch? I watched 2. It's like, we can't
right.
watch. Like, there's nothing for us to do.
No spoilers.
Yeah, so it just becomes that. So I honestly think what Amazon has done with The Boys, and I'm trying to remember the other Amazon shows I've watched. I don't know if this is what they always do, but it is what they do with The Boys, which is...
No, they do it with most of them, where they'll drop...
With most of them, yeah, they drop
2 to 3 episodes, yep.
And then weekly from there. I think that's the ideal.
I do, too.
To your point, it helps to be able to get further if you're not sure. Like, it comes on next, you're like, oh, I'll see where it goes. Then
exactly.
hopefully... I mean, if you're not in 3 hours into a show, most of the time, you're right to pull the plug. There's exceptions, but people will generally... You have to watch
sure.
Succession. So,
yeah.
But in this case, though, I think this was good in that, you know, hey, this is not a show. I mean, obviously, there's like things that surprise you later on in the show, plot wise. But this is not something where people are going to have a bunch of theories they need to break down. I just think having. I also think it's easier, at least for me, with comedies when you throw out. Well, this. Is not necessarily a comedy. But
dramedy? I think that's a fair
definition.
It's a comedy.
Right? I definitely think it's funny.
Oh, it's really funny.
It's also stressful. But, yeah, I think when you have half-hour episodes, it's also easier to just bang through those. Like, with some of these shows, and I also, to their credit, outside of the finale, I think every episode runs right around a half hour. Because some shows in the streaming era...
Under half an hour. They're like 21 to 24 minutes.
Yeah, which... I think that benefits so many shows when you just stick to that 20 to 30 minute one. And then, yeah, if you have a finale where you want to go a little deeper, tack on your 10 to 15.
Looking at you, Stranger Things, with the last 2 episodes being like 12 hours. I mean, what was that?
You don't need it. I mean, even shows that had, like, they were on TV, like, there were the last two seasons of Justified where... And I think this was the same for
Sons of Anarchy.
We're Justified, at least the final season was really good. But the one before that, it was sometimes you're like, did we need the extra 10 minutes of
right.
Michael Rappaport doing a Southern accent? Like, so, yeah, tons of credit to them for having that discipline in storytelling. I think it hugely benefited the show. And in this case, yeah, I think allowing the show to – this is actually the rare show where it came out all at once. But it definitely built over the following weeks with people
saying,
you've got to watch this because this was only marginally on my radar. And then I kept seeing people being like, you got to watch it. And I was like, all right, cool. And then, you know, within a few days, I'd watch the whole thing. And yeah, right. Like I was finishing it right as you were posting on the IB Facebook group that like, hey, this show's awesome.
Well, I mean, it's one of those shows, and I don't always do this, where I thought it was important to tell all my friends that are really into TV, like, you need to watch this. It's that good. And I don't always, you know, do that with shows. You know, I'll talk about it, obviously, if somebody brings it up, but I just think it's rare to, like, I'm like, everybody needs to watch the show. One other thing, then we'll get into, like, what we love, some themes and stuff.
Yeah.
You brought up, again, a good question of how important is realism in a TV show like this? Because they've both been praised, and rightfully so. As you worked in a restaurant, right? I have as well.
I worked one night in a restaurant.
Oh, okay. But you saw one night, because even the calmest night in a restaurant is usually pretty nuts. For its accuracy, just, you know, how stressful an environment, how fast-paced. It's just, it's nuts, man. But at the same time, they've received, and it's really been the only negative feedback that I've seen in several places, that they did not do a good job of portraying Chicago, which, you know, I'm not from Chicago. I don't understand it, but I know this is a big deal with just about any show, movie that is involved in Chicago is how Chicago is it?
Yeah. It is one of those interesting things because, I mean, my gripe with the way sometimes people go with realism is I think you can overvalue it. Like, I don't know what the name of that movie was, but five or six years ago, there was that one that kept all the commercials were like, and they're all played by real Navy SEALs. And I was like, all right, but here's the thing. I don't know anything about, like, beyond the very basics of being a Navy SEAL. I have a friend who was in the SEALs, but I couldn't tell you, like.
Oh, you're talking about the Clint Eastwood movie on the train, right?
No, but.
Oh, but that's another example of it.
But yeah, where it's like, here, like, if someone in a movie does, like, if you go back to the 80s Navy SEALs with Charlie Sheen, I'm sure he did a bunch of stuff in that movie that he would obviously not do if you're a real Navy SEAL.
Right.
Outside of, like, something insane, I'm not going to know if he, like, points his gun the wrong way when he enters a room. Like, unless he's pointing it at his feet or up and straight up in the air, I don't know. I do know what good and bad acting is. I've seen enough. So you can overvalue realism in that way. In the same way, like, obviously, if lawyer shows were what the law was really about, and we just saw these people writing and reading
for
50 minutes, it would not be interesting. So you can go too far, but, you know, that was kind of one of the impressive things, though. As far as the restaurant stuff goes, you know, they're talking about the basics, a lot of the basic stuff. They're talking about what our money situation is. You know, he's giving tips to Marcus about, like, hey, this is how you make sure the bread stays fresh.
Screw brunch, which everybody should agree with. Brunch sucks.
Brunch is amazing. I don't think
I would work
in a restaurant. That's
come
brunch,
on, man. No.
No. Endless mimosas, man. That's what it's all about.
You can get drunk at your house.
But, I mean, yeah, so as far as, like, I think they added to it in that, or just when they're calling out, you know, when they're walking behind someone and stuff, that gives you that added, like, oh, this is what it's really like. Again, I had worked in a restaurant for one day or one night, so I couldn't have told you if they were doing a bunch of stuff wrong. But it feels like it's real, and from what I've read, most of the people agree it is very accurate for the most part, especially just the overall vibe of that stressfulness, especially when it's packed. Everyone's kind of on each other's ass. The Chicago
stuff. It's a small space, too. People don't understand. Yeah. Like, kitchens are very small. And, you know, like the restaurant I worked at, mm-hmm. I mean, there would be 15, 20 people back there. And, again, the aisles are tiny. So if you do not say behind you or on your left, or you will run into somebody real quick. I've also seen just that, you know, they tried to basically blend all the Chicago stuff with weak references like the Cubs. You know, who doesn't like the Cubs? Or the music.
They did get somewhat accurate, obviously, is I think for a lot of people who have limited knowledge of Chicago, especially outside of the sports context, where it's just like, oh, yeah, the Cubs. Where it's like a lot of Chicago does not like the Cubs.
Exactly.
Like, there is a White Sox territory.
Cubs especially, right?
Yeah, so we do see that. A couple of interesting, like, tweets and stuff about from people who are criticizing the Chicago nature was all the Chicago details from the bear feels like everyone involved was from Indiana.
Oh,
that was from WTF or WT Flank Steak on Twitter. Who I've definitely seen her places before. And then Ashley Ray, who's a critic, wrote, "It does not speak Chicago in any of the ways that matter. Neighborhood, class, segregation, race. These things dissolve away in favor of a supposed shared love of the White Sox." She has a whole Substack where she goes into it. And to be fair to what you mentioned earlier, she says all the performances are very good. This is right. Not like a bad show. She was just deeply bothered as someone who lived in the Chicago area for a long time. And then I actually read that Christopher Storr grew up in Chicago, but he has lived in L.A. the last 20 years, which may explain some of, like, the basic stuff is right. But then, like, it's based off of Mr. Beef, which is a real restaurant.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In Chicago, in that same River North area. But apparently River North is now a very gentrified area.
Yep. Well, they kind of tackled that a little bit, too, though. You know, Richie kind of got into that.
Yeah.
It's a very delicate ecosystem.
But it almost feels like it's from my readings. I've been to Chicago like twice in my life. But, and actually, to that point, the last time I was there, I hung out with some people who worked in a restaurant. And they may or may not have done cocaine. So as far as the cocaine being around, I've heard that actually the amount of cocaine in this show is too little.
Yeah, you gotta stay awake, Joe.
We only see someone dealing it. We don't see anyone doing it in the restaurant.
You work crazy hours, Joe. You stay awake.
But yeah, so it feels kind of like if this was supposed to be taking place in the early 2000s, it would actually make more sense as far as the gentrification, where that part of Chicago was at versus where it is now. But again, does that matter to me? Like, I wish it was more accurate. Sure, I'd love to read that, like, this show nailed everything about restaurants in Chicago. But I'm not from Chicago, and as long as they're not doing something just like something so obviously wrong that I would realize it's wrong, as someone who's worked in public schools, sometimes, occasionally, I'll be watching something where something takes place in a classroom, and I'm just like, come on now.
That's, right.
And obviously, lawyers have that, cops have that.
It's a TV show. I think people
like
that.
You've
got
to be able to be like, does this part really matter? Probably not.
I always ask people, Joe, you watch Star Wars or whatever, all that's bullshit, right? And people take stuff like that serious, which to me just shows that, you know.
Oh, but we can always take something too seriously. That's
exactly.
For sure.
It's a TV show.
So, yeah, I think, you know, do I wish it nailed some of the Chicago stuff it apparently didn't? Sure. But to me, it nailed the realism as far as it needed to for this to be as effective as it was, for it to feel like these people mattered, this kitchen, this restaurant mattered, and to feel like they're part of Chicago, even if it's not exactly nailing everything about that. So I think it did everything it needed to.
All right, let's get into some of the themes of the show. Let's start here because it was, I think, my favorite, which is people are layered and complex. If you want to say don't judge a book by its cover, however you want to describe it, because all of the characters in the beginning come across as kind of assholes. Particularly, I think the best example of this was Cuz, who is just... Oh my God, he seems like one of the worst people on earth the first couple of episodes. Then he has the moment with Sydney in the car.
Yeah.
And you hear him talking to his daughter. And you just realize, as is in real life, there's a lot of layers to people. And a lot of times the way they behave is either a defense mechanism, something to do with, you know, the way that they were raised, trauma, whatever you want to call it. And it's, if you will take the time to get to know people, people, I don't want to say change, but they open up and those, you know, walls come down and everybody has their flaws, their weaknesses. But overall, I really do believe a majority of people are good. And I just love the way the show portrayed this. Tina was another prime example who was so against any change, right? Yeah. In the restaurant and really defiant about it. And what actually made her get on board was I love the scene where she's making the mashed potatoes and she had tried Sydney's. She saw how good they were and she felt like mine are inferior. And I'm not a good cook. I'm not up to the level of this, you know, girl that's gone to a culinary school. And her face was, it was great acting when Sydney tries it. She goes, they're great. It was just wonderful. The smile on her face and her attitude completely changed from that point on. And she was all in. And what it was, again, was she was intimidated by Carmi and by Sydney because of their experience. Because she's just a cook, right? At a small restaurant in Chicago, these guys are culinary experts. And just this show, I thought, did a really good job of showing how complex and layered people are and how you have to get to know somebody before you judge them.
Yeah, I think, you know, some people are more good, some people are more bad, but, everyone is multidimensional. Like Richie, or because, you know, he is an asshole. Like, there's not a question about it, but like, does he have redeeming qualities? Yes, he does. Now, obviously, depending on who you are, even as a viewer, you may or may not like him in the end.
Right.
But like, you can acknowledge that like, he doesn't totally suck. Or Tina is a great example because I could not stand her in those early episodes because Yeah, like so much of her stuff is just being awful to Sydney, who's honestly takes, she and Carmi both do a really good job for most of the series. Obviously, as anyone who's watched knows, they both have breaking points, but they we'll do a great job of kind of letting a lot of stuff roll off them. Like even Sydney, who's clearly exasperated by so much of it in those early episodes, like she just keeps going. And you know, to that point, she doesn't try and be mean to Tina and be like, this isn't good enough when she gives her those mashed potatoes. And that turns out to be the whole thing that changes the relationship.
Exactly.
It's her just being a professional and not holding a grudge. And then Tina being able to realize that's all this is. This is just them trying to improve it. And obviously she ends up being one of their bigger converts because yep. she tells Richie that later in the season. It's just like,
you got to go. You're fucking my shit up. I think yeah, those like, exact words.
Everything's better. She's like, I am better at my job now because of them.
It's cleaner. The food's better. It just could be good, you know.
It seemed to be a low bar as far as cleaner goes.
Right.
Yeah, I loved that the show really. And again, even like we said, Carmi and Sydney are kind of the two people trying to bring about change. They're the people who were generally on their side for most of the season, and you know they're not faultless either. You know, even in those early episodes, there's points where you're kind of like, ah, you know, you could be doing better here. You didn't have to be a dick there, whatever it is. But, yeah, I really appreciate that this isn't a show where there's just some awful villain. There isn't a show where there's some white knight. These are complex people.
Another big theme is how grief and trauma affect us.
Yeah.
You know, obviously with the older brother, you know, killing himself. Both Carmen, his sister, Sugar, which, by the way, can we talk about how awesome it is that their last name's Bear and it's Sugar, Carmi, Mikey. It's just wonderful. But I like also that they dealt with it head on. And, you know, people need help. Like, when you go through trauma like this, you have to go over. And it's the same thing for Cuz. I think a lot of his issues is that, you know, that was his best friend. Mike was his best friend, and he killed himself. And, you know, there's the scene outside where he's talking to Carmi, and I've had, unfortunately, a good friend kill himself. And that's exactly, you know, what you say is you immediately go to questioning, what could I have done? What could I have said? You know, Carmi, and it was interesting, the whole reason he's a chef is because his brother yeah. would not let him work and kind of shut him out overall. And he looked up to him, you know, like he was his hero. And he admits in that great monologue in episode 8 that I said, okay, fuck you. You know, I'm going to go do this. So he literally became one of the best chefs in the world out of spite, which it can drive you, but just – I'm glad that they showed Carmi going to meetings. I'm glad that his sister, you know, kept hammering about it and telling him, like, you need to talk about this. This is, you can't just, you know, drown your feelings in work and trying to better the restaurant, which, again, he admitted that, you know, part of reason why he was so dead set on fixing the restaurant, even though he had this unbelievable job that he left and was one of the top chefs in the world. Was because he felt like if he fixed a restaurant, he would fix that broken relationship with his brother who was gone. And it's just kind of like with people being layered, it's a tough, difficult issue that people deal with on a day-to-day basis. And I thought they handled it beautifully.
Yeah, there's a recent interview with Christopher Storr, again, the creator on Esquire, that I was just reading through today. And he mentioned that, you know, he grew up in a household where there was, you know, mental illness. There was some abuse with substances. And that, to be fair, I'm not saying abuse and substances. I'm saying someone's abusing
right.
substances.
Right, yeah.
I just want to be clear there. And he also mentioned that not too long ago, he had a friend who he thought, you know, like, I'm really close to this person. Then they took their own life. And he mentioned, like, you know, you're in these text threads with all these people and you're all kind of like realizing collectively, like there's a lot of things we didn't know about this person. And so, yeah, I think he, you know, I thankfully do not have experience with anyone super close to me taking their own life, but you can feel the reality of what these characters are going through. And I think, you know, in Richie's case, you very much see the immediate reaction to that, where he is just kind of lashing out, not only about the changes in the restaurant, but that, yeah, he lost the person he was closest to.
And it makes so much sense, right, that he's lashing out about the changes, which I didn't get in the beginning.
Right, which also
it's his brother, right? Like, or his best friend. It's like,
yeah,
we're changing him, I'm going to lose him. He even says when he hands finally Carmi the letter, I didn't want to give you this because that would be me admitting he's gone.
Yeah, that's actually a great thing, is that letter that he finds, in that you want him to immediately give it to him. Because that, you know, it's what he should do.
It's a dick move. Yeah, you're like, what,
yeah,
an asshole.
Move, but I love that he puts it back, though.
Yeah,
I think that's such a good little moment, because he didn't, you know, he doesn't throw it away. He doesn't just,
yep,
he doesn't even like keep it for himself somewhere. He
nope.
puts it exactly where he found it. So anyone else could have still found it. It's just, and then obviously eventually he decides to give it back when I think, you know, at that point he's at a healthier place with realize yep. he is gone, but that doesn't have to haunt us the rest of our lives.
Right.
And then, yeah, I mean, I'm an elder brother, so thankfully I have not had to grow up in the shadow of anyone. But
poor Sam.
But and thankfully I'm taller, so he is in my shadow, at least literally.
Ooh, double work. I love it.
But, yeah, no, I think it's really interesting to see what exactly drove Carmi. And I think it's also interesting that we kind of get these revelations. We get the revelation of, you know, exactly why he did what he did throughout his life up until this point. We find out exactly why Sydney, who is also someone who's worked at accomplished restaurants and then chooses to come work at this local neighborhood Italian beef place, even if it is, like, seemingly a well-known one in Chicago. We find out why she's actually working there, and that happens all in the finale.
Yep.
And what I like about it is we like those reveals. There's a strength to them in that moment, but we also kind of feel like at least we knew some of this already, just by what we've seen them do. Not even like they've had to have these, you know, very, you know, lazy monologues where they just
right.
explain their feelings. Obviously, he ultimately does do a monologue where he explains a lot of stuff, but I think also in by doing that in, you know, a meeting.
I thought it was well done.
Yeah, that actually is a place where people do bare their souls like that. It's not just, you know, some out of the blue thing.
And he wouldn't open up, right? He had the conversation
yeah.
earlier that he, you know, part of the reason he can't ask people how they're doing, because his sister's mad that he hasn't, you know, been asking her how she's doing, is the fact that he goes, I don't know how I feel all the time. So then it feels, you know,
yes.
just, you know, pointless to ask other people, you know, how they're doing.
100%. The stuff with his sister, which is just, you know, really tiny moments kind of sprinkled throughout the season. I think it really works out well that way, because it does give us these little parts of, you know, what he's going through, because he really is just so focused on the job throughout most of the season. And most of the season, and I think this is the strength of it, is very focused on the job as well. There's really only two of the eight episodes really venture out for any extended period of time away from the restaurant.
And one of them, they're still on the job, right? They're just doing
yeah,
it
that's
their
true.
Uncles.
Yeah, so I think that's a strength. Cheers famously never left the bar in the first season.
Which is
one of the ways that you establish a setting. I mean, Community did the same thing, where they do not leave community college throughout the first season. And so, again, this show did venture out a little bit, but it's tended to be brief. It was very much focused on the restaurant. And I think, that again, that plays well, where it was so focused, he's so focused, and now finally in that last episode, he's kind of gaining a little more perspective on his life and the restaurant going forward.
All right, the next one. This may be a stretch for some people, but this is kind of what I got out of it, is just generations and how, you know, the older I get, unfortunately, because I keep getting older, you know, about every decade, it's a different mindset, right? Especially in the workforce, because, you know, when you're in your 20s, like Sydney is, I think, portrayed to be like in her late 20s, you know, you're going to change the world, right? Like, you're going to shake things up. And you will typically bump heads with people that are older than you.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't realize that there's a good chance they were in your position at one point, right? When they started. And then reality set in, right? Whether it be financial, you know, administrative, whatever. You can't just do whatever you want in the, you know, the business work world. And to me, it's interesting, you know, Sydney even talks about that if she doesn't go back, she's just going to continue going place to place, right, for the rest of time. And I really, I mean, even to a sense with Cuz, I think that that's part of his disconnect with her. And especially with the older characters who, you know, didn't want to change. Because we know that as you get older, I'm realizing this now, I used to say, you know, don't be that person that doesn't like change. It happens to everybody. I mean, the older you get more into your routines, more into what you like. And it just, it does, it's scary when there's change. But I just thought it was interesting the way that, you know, there's so much confrontation between the you know, the co-employees. Yeah. And I think a lot of it's about where you're at in life.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. Is, and that's one of the interesting things, yeah, is that you have the two younger people for the most part in the restaurant. You know, obviously Marcus isn't super old or anything, but yeah, you used to have the two younger people coming in and wanting to bring change. And then, yeah, Tina and Richie are kind of the two more resistant. I also think the show does, I mean, this is not necessarily on the theme, but I think the show does a really interesting thing in that there's no true entry point character. Like, I mean, this is a lazy comparison, but, you know, in Waiting, John Francis Daly shows up and it's his first day on the job. And so he's there.
Oh, yeah.
So that Ryan Reynolds and other people, but mostly Ryan Reynolds, can explain all this restaurant stuff.
Right.
Which obviously is mostly there, so then the audience will understand.
It's an info dump.
Whereas this show, like, A, just kind of throws you in.
Yeah.
But also B, like, Sydney's kind of the intro character in some ways to the dynamics of the restaurant. Because even Carmi, like, obviously he doesn't know everything about the dynamics there, but he's, like, he's been around the restaurant. This is his brother's restaurant. She's totally new to it. So she's kind of there for that. But then she and Carmi are the ones teaching, you know, these more, you know, I guess for lack of a better word, fancier restaurant ideas to the rest of the staff. So we're kind of learning with different parts of the show with different characters. And I think that's really a strength of the show, in that there's no character who just kind of like, they're a non-entity or they feel stupid because they don't know things. It's they all have reasons they know what they know and reasons that they don't know some things. And I think that allows us to identify with each character at different aspects of the show. I think it's really a strength.
Yeah, Cuz says exactly that, you know, they're kids. That's part of the reason that he's having such a hard time accepting, I think, you know.
Sure.
These are the bosses, is they're younger than me.
That is an interesting thing in life, for sure.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Anytime someone younger than you is telling you to do stuff. Although I think in my head sometimes I still think I'm younger than I am.
That's me.
Like, oh yeah, I'm like,
I'm still one of the young guys. I'm like,
this person's like 6 years younger than me. I'm like,
oh Joe, wait, it gets worse.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
I'll be at work and I'm like, wait a minute, you're how much younger than me? let's get into some of our favorite moments. Actually, let's do favorite character first. Mm-hmm. Who's yours?
I mean, if like it's just a character that I love and want good things to happen to, it's probably Marcus, but because he's just a lovable guy. But apparently he actually went and trained at like bakeries and stuff. But
Fack is actually a chef, like a pretty famous one.
Yeah, which I didn't know until I started watching it, because I'm not someone who's knowledgeable.
Oh, I didn't either. I had no clue. I read it actually in an article yesterday.
But I think Richie's my favorite character. I just think, you know, Evan Moss Bacharach just nails everything I feel about who this guy is. And I also feel like it's a nice contrast with, what was it, Desi in Girl? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, as much as we talked about how everyone has redeemable, you know, characteristics and stuff, I don't remember anything redeeming about Desi in Girl. So that guy was the worst. And it was a good performance, but man, it was just like, he was pretentious, he was insecure, and he wasn't funny. At least not purposefully, whereas Richie actually is, he's funny and like you laugh at him, but he's also funny sometimes. Like,
oh no, he's just hilarious.
When he walks into the restaurant, it's just like, what's going on, you fucking replicants?
his like, speech just thrown out to the kids at the arcade when they're getting rowdy outside is the, what does he say? You QAnon fucks.
Yes.
And the last thing is he's like, don't litter. I love that. Then he was like done. And then he ended the speech. He got back on the megaphone and was like, and I hate fucking litter. So pick up all your trash. It's a great performance. I mean, obviously Sydney and Carmen both gave, or I should say Jeremy and Io.
Yeah, great characters, great performances. Like, you can't go wrong picking a favorite on those.
I'm going to go with Abby Elliott, though, as his sister, who, I mean, I felt like she was throwing definitely the Dion Waiters Award. If this was a rewatchables podcast, she was fantastic in very limited scenes. And it meant so much to me to see her and her husband doing family dinner in the last episode, because that means that the relationship, you know, has been healed. And I really hope that she is involved, and I think she will be, much more in the seasons to come. But I really did. I thought that it was – that was not an easy job that she had.
No.
To, you know, she was. She made a significant, you know, role in this show and did it in very limited time. I mean, she didn't even come in the restaurant. You think about it. We talked about this, right, that the entire show, for the most part – in the restaurant, and there's a couple of times she's at the door, but literally until that final episode, at the very end of it, she doesn't step inside of it. So I thought she was great. Let's move on.
That's a great call, because exactly what you're saying. Like, as much as, you know, again, the three leads are all great, you know, those are, I think, you know, extremely well-written characters. We spend a lot of time with them. You know, and so in some respect, they're almost an easier role, whereas she really has... You know, the sister who's just trying to get you to talk to them or get you to pay the bills, that's a role that can suck. Yeah. Like, there's so many shows where it's like, oh, this person's on screen again, even if you know they're right.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't think there was ever a point where I was just like, yeah, I wish she'd go away. It was just not, like,
you can tell she cares, right? She's trying to get the family back together. And I
think it's also important, the way that Carmi reacts to her is... Even if sometimes he's a little annoyed, he always realizes that.
Yep.
And I think that also helps us to then not, you know, dig into some toxic characteristics of, like, looking
turn at into Skyler on Breaking Bad, where though she is being held hostage by a maniac, everybody's like, what a bitch.
It's something I think a lot of people, I think the Better Call Saul people definitely, I think everyone involved learned some stuff from that experience. Yeah. And crafting a character to make sure... You avoid people falling into the as much as you can, toxic viewing. So I think, yeah, I think Abby Elliott is a great choice.
All right, let's get into our favorite moments. And I want to start with the ball breaker arcade game scene, the entire thing. At first, when they were like, ball breaker, I was like, what is it? It's a Mortal Kombat, what did they say, Japanese ripoff? I think that's what they said. But between the kids and the outfits, I love the conversation of the staff inside when they're like, is that a carrot? And I think it is, cuz is like, of course it's a fucking carrot. Have you not ever seen a carrot before? Cause the guy is obviously a carrot. It leads to the great speech by cuz outside saving Carmi from literally getting beat up. What was one of your favorites?
I think it was just, the reaction when they have to go, cater the birthday party. And, what was it? Xanax accidentally goes.
Oh God, yes, in the Ghostbusters drink. Yes. Yeah.
And so just like a dozen kids are just laying on like the backyard grass.
By the end of the party, basically the entire party's out. What I love is their uncle is a wise guy, which I mean that was pretty much established, right? That he is a wise guy.
I mean, that's why he has $300,000.
Right. I love that when Carmi starts to tell him, he goes, okay, don't kill me. And he goes, I can't wait to hear this. Yeah. He lets him know what happened. He looks around at all the kids passed out, and he goes, I love it.
Yeah, he's like, you know what? This works for me, which Oliver Platt is great in that role. And I also just love that his name is Cicero.
I know, right?
Maybe that's too much for some people. I think it's perfect.
I did too. I thought it was great. And I also just love that one thing that we didn't mention is, you know, they did a good job talking about. Let's go ahead and get into the cameo.
Yeah.
By our boy. Can you pronounce his name? Because I butcher everybody's names.
But I just want to thank you, Keith, for saying our boy about John Bernthal.
Yeah.
Because it's like every pod when we discuss Deshaun Watson, Alan is like, our boy. And I'm like, he's definitely not our boy. Do not want any claim to Deshaun Watson. But absolutely, 100%, we will claim John Bernthal. Love John Bernthal.
Great in everything. Exactly. I mean, everything he's ever been in.
I can't recall something where I was like, he's not really nailing it in this one. Like he
is the older brother. They have one scene with him, which I was like, holy shit, that's who? The older brother, it's a wonderful scene of them, the siblings, and cuz just hanging out, making food, telling a great Bill Murray story, which I won't ruin. We'll let, you know, if you haven't watched the show or if you have, you know what I'm talking about. And they did a great job. And of course, he's such a great actor, but, you know, he killed himself. He had all these issues. He was not a perfect person. And I loved how people talked about him being a mess, a Morono, you know, all these things. But everybody also said, I loved him. You know, yeah. Tina went out of her way to say, you know how much I loved him. His uncle, after just saying he basically took $300,000 and then killed himself, said, you know, and Carmy's like, why did you do it? I love the kid. I just, again, it shows that just because you have some bad qualities or you have a problem or whatever, you know, we're all human and you can still love them for the person that they are.
Yeah, and I also love the way that scene further informs what we know about Carmy and Richie. In that you totally understand why Carmy ended up kind of defining himself in response to his brother. Because, I mean, it's John Bernthal. You know, he's charismatic as hell. The food he's making looks delicious. And then also, the entire rest of the season, whenever we're around Richie, he is the one who's trying to be the center of attention. He's loud. He does tell good stories. But then we see that, you know, back when Mikey was alive, Mikey was the center of attention. You know, really, Richie, I think, probably in his own life, defined himself in some ways as Mikey's best friend.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that just further goes to show, like, how displaced he is in his life when this show starts. And one of the things I also just love about the show is that we have, like, pretty big guest stars who show up sometimes for, like, two lines. Like, Joel McHale shows up.
Oh, right.
And then to show us back when Carmy was working at the fancy restaurant. He's just this abusive piece of shit chef.
How perfectly
cast,
too.
He's in for like a minute. And then Molly Ringwald shows up the first meeting, and that's it. She's not even at the next meeting. And then you contrast that with the actual cast, and I think this is one of the best parts of the show, is how many of these people you either haven't seen before, you didn't realize you saw before, or you're like, I can kind of place them. Like, on IMDb, you can always, you know, click on an actor, and it'll show you, like, their first four things that they're supposedly known for. So of the nine actors who appeared in every episode according to IMDb, or at least are credited as being in every episode, if you remove Jeremy Allen White and Evan Moss Bacharach and just go to the next seven people, six of them they're known for has the bear. And again, this is a show that's been out for less than 2 months. So these are not big name actors.
Like, I will say Sugar's husband was great in Love, which is a show I love.
Oh, yeah, Netflix. No. I was very happy to see him show up. Like, here's something you probably didn't realize, which is Ibrahim, the older guy in the restaurant, played Bill Russell in Winning Time.
Oh, my God, I can see it, though, too.
And these are two of his top four listed shows, and they're both came out this year where he did not have huge roles, but. So that's my point, is like they filled out this cast with people who they feel more real because we don't know them that much outside.
And Joe, it's good to know that Ibrahim has sewed an asshole shut. Remember when he gets stabbed? He says, once about I got stabbed in the asshole. You can't sew an asshole. And Ibrahim goes, oh, I've sewed an asshole before. The last thing I want to cover in the things we like, because it was absolutely my favorite thing about the show. And the theme I didn't mention either is just the family dinner and how you can make families anywhere. whether it be through work, friends. It doesn't have to be people that are your blood, you know, because some people have shitty families, unfortunately. I wish that wasn't the case, but it is. But if you'll just open yourself up, you can make family anywhere. I love that they do dinner. I love how much pride whatever employee it is that is responsible for the dinner takes in making that for the other coworkers.
No, yeah, definitely. They get through the importance of it in, multiple ways. And, you know, obviously the found family thing is not something that's, you know, new to TV. It's
right.
It's a pretty hard-running trend.
Full House.
At least, as far as, like, at least my lifetime, that has been a major factor throughout TV, probably since the beginning. But we really haven't seen it in the restaurant setting. Like, it really is kind of a weird thing. That we've had 500 cop, firefighter, lawyer shows, or two doctor shows.
That's just in Chicago. But,
yes, exactly. But you'd think a restaurant would be something that we would see more often. It's definitely some place where you can. I haven't worked one. But I think when you go through that stress together and you can come out the other side and still like hopefully most of the people you're working with, you know, that kind of is how you build family. You
right.
go through stressful times, and if you still like each other at the end, then hopefully that's how your family works, right?
You have to deal with your issues, which is the biggest issue, in my opinion, with most relationships that fall apart, is whether it be somebody's afraid to get into an argument, or they don't like to, or they don't want to say something to hurt somebody's feelings. At the end of the day, to me, family is being able to tell them when they're full of shit or when they're pissing you off or to have a bad day and just be an asshole and they still love you.
Right. Yeah. I think you have to have that ability to call people out and to be called out. And, you know, obviously we're not always as accepting as we should be at the start
for sure.
You know, things flare up. But yeah, you come back. I think that's kind of the key, is you come back. And then hopefully you're better. And obviously in the finale, we kind of see that. And the way like Carmi welcomes Sydney and Marcus back, you know, you and I talked briefly off air that we were a little frustrated that
we need to get out into that. The hot take of...
Well, first let's touch on episode 7.
Yeah.
Is incredible. Like you said, the confined spaces that they're shooting in. And that they're able to shoot, you know, it all appears, I'm
gave
sure, through one take. But, yeah, they shoot it like the entire episode is one take. And, yeah, incredible camera work. But also what I loved about it is I'd heard that, you know, episode 7 is the one take episode. But, like, even just watching it, knowing that, I would forget sometimes.
Oh, I didn't realize it. I had not seen that. Until I wrote an article afterwards, I had no idea. I was like, wow.
Exactly. I'm not sure I would have known because, you know, it's so intense for the majority of the runtime of that episode, like 99% of
it. It's shot very similar than to the other episodes when they're
the only showy part about it is that they did it. It's not trying to call your attention to it. And I love that. You know, there's always room for some showmanship, but I think the primary thing you should always be focused on if you're the director, you're the cinematographer, is servicing the story. And I think that one did, because I think it helped amp up that anxiety that the characters were having and transferred it a little bit to us. But yeah, it didn't pull me out of the episode at all. It just put me further into it. So, the highest of credit to everyone involved on that.
Let's get into the Sydney part. Go ahead.
But yeah.
Because I'm glad you agree with me.
So yeah, so two running things are Sydney, who again is, she's kind of number two to Carmi. She's new to the restaurant. They're trying to update the restaurant. And one of her ways is, let's allow people to order without having to come here, which makes a lot of sense. Take orders, you can make more money that way. She forgets to turn off pre-orders when they make the system live.
Well, so didn't they say 99 orders were
overnight? It's something insane. Yeah, it might have been over 100. It's
the visual of the for the next 3 minutes of the episode of just ticket after ticket after ticket.
Yeah.
That was what was giving me so much stress.
No, you're right, because every time it seems like they're starting to get somewhere, it's just like, no, they're still rolling in. There's no way to catch up. And so...
What did you say? Cook all the fucking chickens.
So she's taking a lot of, you know, deserved heat for that. And there was also the thing where she was trying to get risotto on the menu and gave it to someone who, unbeknownst to her...
She knew. Oh, yeah, for sure. She knew.
I didn't.
I think she did, but that's okay.
Right. I like the ambiguous nature of it. But she gave it to someone who turned out to be a food critic, and then that made it into the review about the restaurant. And Carmi plays it off like he doesn't care that much.
He does.
He's definitely holding back. You know, I think obviously his bigger frustration was her messing up the order system, but
especially because they were all so hesitant about it. And she, and you know,
she combusts. She's semi-accidentally, but definitely not totally accidentally, stabs Richie.
Yeah, because she was definitely harnessing the knife at him just moments earlier. Because he even says, "Are you gonna stab me?"
Yeah, it was kind of felt like the moment that Walt shoots Mike in Breaking Bad, where he just like, "Oh, should not have done that." Where she's just like immediately like, "Oh no, I've done something terrible." But,
and she leaves is my big thing. Yeah, and again, they're all in the wrong. I don't want to get this take confused. They're all in the wrong. But what me and Joe both, and I love that you had this conversation with your brother because we had not talked about it. She should have apologized. Carmi fucking apologized. And yeah, he should have.
She was responsible.
Yeah. She left. This was your fucking idea. It turned into a nightmare, and you're just like, "I quit because I got into an argument." And they kind of try to portray it on the show like it wasn't her fault. It was all Carmi. And it's like, no, it's not.
Like, unless there's something we're supposed to have known, which they clearly did not convey, about how it wasn't really her fault that the system started that way. Like, if it was like, oh, this was her idea, but it wasn't her fault that it actually, like, was taking these orders, then it would make sense.
Right.
It would be like, no, this wasn't on her. But so far as we can tell from the episode, she was the one in charge of it as far as setting it, in which case it was entirely her fault. And then Marcus also, you know, he gets way too into trying to figure out his new donut recipe.
And he's been warned in previous episodes that you can do this as much as you can as long as it doesn't affect your work.
Right. And then he decided, which I understand why he's so excited. He's like cracked the code on his
own. He's going to help himself.
Does not remotely seem to understand the timing of this.
I cracked the code.
You should not be celebrating and coming up to Carmi in the middle of just a humongous.
Literally a shitstorm. I mean, it was a shitstorm.
Which actually more or less happened in an earlier episode. But
exactly.
But yeah, so he also ends up quitting, obviously in less dramatic fashion than Sydney. So I can...
He didn't stab somebody and then tell another person. Or didn't, and also tell him that his daughter thinks he's a loser. I mean, she said some horrible things. It bothered me that she didn't apologize.
So I can more or less be like, sure, Marcus can just come back. The Sydney stuff, the fact that, although I guess her timing is also perfect because it's right when they've discovered that
everybody's on the high of, hey, we just found $300,000.
So maybe that explains it. I would like in season two for there to be some sort of moment of like,
that
hey,
would be cool.
I'll never
cheat
on you again.
Point,
something like that.
I won't stab you again.
And then as far as the, you know, the tomato cans, which we find out when Richie does give Carmi the letter, it has the recipe for the pasta that Carmi had retired because he's like, the pasta's not that good, whatever. And he'd ask, one of the things I loved about the way that the tomato can stuff works is it was notable enough that we remembered it. That he's
I thought that the breadcrumbs they laid were perfect.
Why was he buying all these small cans when the rich ones, or not the rich ones, the big ones are cheaper? Like,
and they played it off as this kid's crazy. Why does he do anything?
Yeah. And then even when he reads the letter, it says in parentheses, the small ones taste better.
Yeah.
And so then you're immediately, you just accept that. That was the reason why.
You're right.
It's kind of a nice little bow that they put on this. And of course he actually opens it and
this crazy fucker
has
put $330,000 in tomato
money wrapped up in them. Now the actual logistics of that are a little sketchy, but
a little.
Supposedly.
How awesome would it have been if you work at the restaurant, you were going to make spaghetti and you're like, you know what? I need to borrow a can of tomatoes.
That's the other thing is I wonder how this plays out if someone else had figured this out.
Exactly.
Siphoning the money away the whole time instead of this joyous.
I'm cooking spaghetti again for family.
Yeah. You might have taken a few cans. I'll replace them. The logistics are a little sketchy. There's at least one article online breaking down whether it's possible. Basically, is very remotely possible. But yeah, then the interesting thing too about this ending is, you know, Sydney and Carmi throughout the season, they've kind of had their little moments where they talk about what their ideal restaurant was. And he's mentioned
that was really cool.
What his original ideal with his brother was as well. And so when she comes back, I actually kind of do appreciate that that moment doesn't have either of them go into the apology because he'd already texted her earlier.
Right.
It's just immediately she's come back and he just goes straight to, like, we're discussing in this moment what we want out of this
restaurant. I thought it was cool, too, that Richie was the one that was like, hey, get in here. You know what I mean? That,
yeah, yeah.
You're now part of this family.
Yeah, I think it's a good – as much as I do think she, again, should probably apologize. There's that understanding of all of them. Like, we've all been there. We've had our moments.
Well, he has the conversation with Marcus when he fucks up, right? Yeah. When he's like, I won't do it again. He goes, oh, yeah, you will. That's just what this is.
Yeah, this
real quickly, before we get out of here, season two, they have an opportunity to do whatever they want.
They do.
That's why I was saying pilot. It felt like a pilot, right? Like, because they did 8 excellent episodes. And just the sign, you know, of thank you for the, you know, your patronizing or your, you know, supporting us, whatever. The bear is coming. And so, I mean, they can make it all about the restaurant. They can make it about the restaurant. They have so many directions to go. I'm very excited about it. Or I'm assuming you are, too.
I am. I will say the one thing that was a little amusing to me is that, you know, it doesn't sound like they're making some super high-end dining place.
Right.
But it definitely feels like it's going to be a step up from the, you know, an Italian beef sandwich shop. So it was just kind of funny that amidst this, like, Richie's ecosystem, the gentrification stuff, it's like, so we're kind of gentrifying this restaurant. It's like Chicago mainstay Italian beef place. I that just made me laugh. It was kind of like, all right, I guess we're just going to go for it. But, yeah, I'm very excited to see where it goes. I do think it's interesting in that it does kind of feel like the whole thing is, you know, like the title of the show is The Bear. And then at the very end, it's not really common because that's what, isn't that one of Carmi's nicknames or something?
What's that?
Was The Bear a nickname for him at all?
Well, I'm saying their last name is Bear.
His last name is Behringer, yeah. Right? Something. Or Bruzzotto. Yeah, Bruzzotto. So, yeah, but, you know, outside of that, you could very easily just be wondering the entire season, like, why is this called The Bear? And it would have been funny if the show ended after one season and it was like, oh, it was called The Bear because what they were going to do next.
Well, they had the one dream where, right, he's letting the bear out of the cage. Just an excellent show. Again, I'm very thankful that it was made. It's the great part about streaming services and, I will never, you know, hear just rip it again without thinking of it, right?
That was a great little moment, too. I mean, this was definitely a show where I definitely got a little dusty where I was watching.
Oh, they did a great job of, you know, you mentioned it. You know, it's not theories and stuff like that, but there was a ton of stuff that they telegraphed without you knowing they were telegraphing it. And to me, that's great TV when you know it, but you don't see it coming.
Right. And, you know, like you said, they laid the breadcrumbs, but it never distracted. You weren't trying to think like, man, I really wonder what's going on with those tomatoes the whole season. You know, it wasn't so obvious that you knew you should be thinking about it, but it was still, and it was notable enough that when it comes back around, you're like, oh yeah, like that's perfect. And yeah, I think this is definitely, again, in a very steep year for TV, where, I mean, we've had Barry, we've had finally some new Atlanta.
Better Call Saul has been incredible.
Better Call Saul has, you know, been killing it as it has been throughout its run. The Bear is up there. I mean, The Bear will, I'll be shocked if it's not on my
top. It's going to get nominated. I think it's going to get nominated.
I'll say
Best Show
for TV. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously Emmy season. You know, it's going to be, I have to wait a full year to get around. Because
I think that's going to help it, though, right? Because it's still at like 100% with the critics. And
I wouldn't be surprised if we see, I think, any of the three leads. I think Richie.
I think you're going to get a supporting two in there, too. I really do.
Yeah, the two. I would definitely, even more, as much as I liked Jeremy Allen White, I would say I'm rooting even harder
Richie and Sydney. Yeah.
Ayo Edebiri to get in there.
All right. Well, we loved it, as you can tell.
Yeah.
Be sure to subscribe to the IB Podcast Network. Be sure to join the Facebook group, follow them on Instagram and Twitter. And, you'll see, me and Joe soon. But so for Keith Fleming and Joe Matz, this has been a special IB Entertainment podcast discussing the Bear on the IB Podcast Network. We'll see you soon, guys.